thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Notice our general theme, building blocks. Rediscovering the art of neighboring. We've been focusing in on that. There's a lot of things that I've seen happen as a result of the planning stages and coming up to where we are today. One of the things that is somewhat exciting to me is that 43 churches in this Northwest area are bringing this same message today as I'm bringing to you. Now, what that means is that 43 of the spiritual leaders of this community have come together and said, this is important. This is something that we should need to focus in on together and see something happen, see God move in some significant ways. So that's one thing about it. But another thing about it is that I think we're getting the mind of the Lord. Maybe we're getting a little bit, finding out about what is really on God's heart for the days in which we're living and for the communities where God has placed us. So last week, we started out with a verse that Jesus had to answer a question that was presented to him. And here was the question. Which is the greatest of all commandments? And you have to realize that there were 613 of them that the Jewish people were supposed to be living by. But Jesus, without missing anything, he said, here, the Lord our God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And without stopping, he just said, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And I thought, I had to ask myself this question. Why did Jesus give two answers to a question that only required one answer? He said, which is the greatest of all the commandments? And Jesus gave what we, by a surface reading, you would think two answers. But then I posed the question, was it really two answers? Or was it one answer? Because if you go on into the epistles of John, you find out that loving our neighbor is important as loving God. Because he said, if you tell me you love God and don't love your neighbor or hate your brother, then you're a liar. In other words, the truth of God isn't in you as a result of that. So they're connected. So what I found out, I really believe it is one answer, that God sees them as one. How important is it for us to know our neighbors, to reach out, to somewhat be there for our neighbors? Let me show you this little video clip, and I think it gives us a little bit of insight of the impact you can have on your neighborhood.
When you have a neighbor that comes to you and says, we really want a bigger house or need a bigger house, but we love our neighborhood, we love this neighborhood so much we can't move, it says something about the people around you. It says something about the fact that the efforts you've put in or the efforts others are putting in are actually paying off.
We had a neighbor who suffered from cancer, and Ken offered to bring dinner over once a week while he was going through all the chemo and so forth, just to let his wife have a break.
And she said, you don't need to do that. I said, you're right, I don't need to do this, but it's something I want to do. It's something you can just on Tuesday nights, you don't have to worry about fixing dinner when you get home from work after struggling all day. You spend the evening with Jim and I'll come over and bring dinner. And we did that until Jim passed away. And it was just something we do because I was fixing dinner anyway. What's the difference if I put enough more on for two more people? So it would be easier some days just to pull in the garage, shut the door down, but I want to get to know people. It means that, hey, I see him out there shoveling for his backyard so it'll grow better and it's a hot day. I'm driving home. I want to go in and grab a glass of lemonade or a glass of ice water. And I pick up my shovel and my wheelbarrow and I meet him out in the street and say, hey, let's get this done. Sometimes I don't want to do it. I've even done that when I had places to be. So for me to sacrifice that and to be a little bit late to what I had planned and to help somebody out is more important to me. I was thinking about it just this morning. I let somebody go ahead of me. I was going to get a donut. I waited for them. I opened the door, let them go in front of me. and stand in line in front of me even. So, and at the end of it, I thought, well, it was 15, 20 seconds extra that I stood. If I can't give 15 or 20 seconds to somebody, what kind of, you know, what kind of love is that? What kind of person am I if I can't give somebody 15 or 20 seconds of my time? And in the same respect with your neighbors who you know that much better, what is it if I give them 15 or 20 minutes? It's not a lot on my part, but with our neighbor who was sick and just taking dinner, it was 5 minutes of my time tops, but it meant so much to them because it was something that met a need in their life.
And I think that's what God's called us to do, is love others.
Last week we made 3 points. Look at your notes and let's just rehearse those just for a second. And I'll add a fourth point to it today, and then I have two special guests with us that are going to help me with the remaining part of our message together. First of all, as a result of what Jesus said about our neighbors, loving our neighbors and identifying who our neighbor is, Jesus really meant for us to love our literal neighbor, the person who's very close to us. Sometimes we have the big picture too much in mind as Christians, as a church, that our responsibility, you know, we look at it more globally or citywide rather than just focusing right in on our literal neighbor. And as a result of that, God has strategically placed us in our neighborhoods for a reason. You ever think about that? He put you where you are for a reason. I'm in Colorado for a reason. You're in Colorado for a reason. We're in the Northwest area for a reason. You're in your neighborhood, whether it be an apartment complex, a condominium, duplex, cul-de-sac, street. You're there for a reason. You say, well, I'm only temporarily here. I'm really looking forward to moving. It doesn't matter. Even that temporary position that God has given you, there's a reason for it. Strategically placed you there. Thirdly, if God has strategically placed you there, then God should be evident through you to those he has placed around you. What does that mean? That means that the life that you live is the same thing that you talk, that you're walking the walk. This is what's going to have an impact on people more than the words that you say to them. Listen, I go back to my first encounter with God. And at that particular time, I didn't know if I believed in God. I didn't know if God was real. I didn't know if the furthest thing from my mind is that he had a plan for my life. But I was exposed to someone who found a relationship with Christ. And God was real to them. And I saw a transformation in their life. And as a result of seeing their life, I was stirred in my heart. And I remember my first prayer. Here's the first prayer that I ever prayed. God, I don't know if you're real. But if you are, then you give me what he has down there. I was in the mountains as I prayed this. I was at what he has down there. That was my first prayer. And I'm here today as a result of it. Why? What was it? He didn't preach to me. He didn't share the four spiritual laws with me. He simply was living the life. He had a transformed life. He was different. He was more caring, he was more loving, there was a shine about him, there was something different about him. That attracted me. That's what's going to attract our neighborhood. God's got to be evident through you. So if our goal is to move from stranger to acquaintance to relationship, we have to ask ourselves a question. How's this going to happen? Let me try to answer that today. I'll give you one point to this. How's that going to happen in our life? Well, first of all, we're going to have to deal with the subject of time and busyness. We're going to have to create space in our lives to allow this to happen. You're going to have to be intentional about thinking about your time, thinking about your schedule, thinking about this, I don't know, I call it a misguided perception that we're all too busy, and we find ourselves too busy to do that which is most important to God. The psalmist said, teach us to number our days and recognize how few they are. Help us to spend them as we should. The psalmist knew that he only had so many days to accomplish so much, and he wanted to do what was important. Obviously, this was the cry of his heart. How important is it for us to do what is important to God? I think every one of us would absolutely answer that, yes, that's what I want to do. I think this is important to God. I think knowing our neighbor, reaching out to our neighbor is important to God. Busyness and hurry are the enemies of relationship and intimacy. Listen to this. Dr. Michael Zigarelli, he was doing a study, and I don't know some of the background, what led him into this study, but he was trying to explain why Christians are so busy and distracted. He never could come up with an answer why they're so busy and distracted, but he was able to explain the problem, which I think makes sense. He said that the problem with Christians, that they're caught in a vicious cycle. And it's prompted, listen to this, by cultural conformity. And he describes this cycle, how it moves. It may be the case that Christians are assimilating to a culture of busyness, hurry, and overload, which leads to God becoming marginalized in Christians' life, which leads to a deteriorating relationship with God, which leads to Christians becoming even more vulnerable to adopting secular assumptions about how to live, which leads to more conformity to a culture of busyness, hurry, overload, and then the cycle begins all over again. Do you hear what's being said here? Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul said that we're not to be conformed to the world, but we're to be what? Transformed. Now, I don't know how you looked at that, but is it possible that we've even conformed to the busyness and the hurriedness of life? That we're moving so quickly through life that we're overlooking the very basic things that God is calling us to do, and that is to reach out to our neighbor, to be sensitive to the needs that are around us, so we take time to meet those needs, to be Jesus to the world around us. In the Gospel of Mark, I made the reference here, but let me tell you a story about Jesus' life. Jesus had 3.5 years to accomplish all the things that we know that he accomplished. Now, there's no one in here, hopefully no one in here would say, well, Jesus doesn't understand my schedule. I'm a lot busier than he was. I don't think so. But, you know, it just seemed that Jesus had time to do everything he needed to do, even in the rush of everything. And the story here in Mark is about a time when he was ministering somewhere in Israel, and there was a lot of crowds around him. And there was a man who had a daughter. His name was Jairus, and his daughter was sick. And he had come to Jesus because he believed Jesus could heal his daughter. And he inquired of Jesus. He said, would you come to my house? My daughter is sick. And Jesus said, yes, he would. And as he moved in that direction, the crowds were pressing in on him. And there was a woman that also had a need. And she was desperate. She pushed through the crowd. She reaches out and she touches the hem of his garment, and immediately Jesus stops. And he said, who touched me? Now, those that were immediately around him said, what do you mean, Master? Who touched you? Everybody, they're all over you. How could you identify any one individual who touched you? He said, no, something happened. Something different happened. Virtue went out of me. And the woman came forward. She had the issue of blood, and Jesus healed her. But here's the point of that, is that you know, as Jesus was sensitive enough to know that the desperation in this woman's heart to touch him, that he was able to stop and sense that desperation. Are we stopping? Are we open to the small, still voice of God as we're driving into our neighborhoods for God to be able to say in that small, still voice, why don't you stop? They're in the driveway. Go over and talk to them. Or why don't you pick up the phone and invite them, or whatever it might be. The sensitivity of and an openness to the Spirit-led. We call ourselves Spirit-led people. Are we really Spirit-led people, or are we driven? Driven by the culture that is around us and overlooking these opportunities. Well, in the meantime, the daughter died. But guess what? Jesus had time to go to her house, and he healed the daughter. Another incident in the book of Acts, where it was John and Peter after Jesus ascended into heaven, they were going to the temple. They did it every day. This particular day, Peter stopped. He looked at a man who had been lame since he was a child, and he was laying there begging at the temple entrance. And he said, he fixed his eyes on him, and he said, listen, silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, I give to you. Rise and walk in the name of Jesus. The man was healed. Now, Peter stopped that day. his schedule. You know, we're on our way to church sometimes, and because we're on our way to church because we're spiritual, and we want to get to the church, and then there might be just a need that we're just going by so quickly. But here's another thing about that story. How often did Peter and John miss the opportunity? Because that man was there every day at the temple, and they went to the temple often. How many opportunities are we missing in the hurriedness of life? Now, here's the question. I'm gonna throw this question out to you, and then we're going to end with it later on after we have our guest up here. What would it take to change the pace of your life? Personalize this. What will it take to change the pace of your life in order to be more available to those who live around us? What's it going to take? David Runyon is with us here today. David and I have become friends in the community for several reasons, but David was a pastor at a church here in the community, and we got to know one another, and he started talking about something that was on his heart, began to ask questions about, what do you think God would have us do, the collective community of believers? What should we be doing in the Northwest area that God would be pleased over, something that we should be doing? And as we talked about it, David just had it upon his heart just to take us to a new level. And he challenged us pastors and these churches. And it was because of his efforts and because of what he's doing right now that we are doing what we are doing here today. So I've asked David to be with us today. So would you welcome David Runyon as he comes and shares with us. Poor bud.
Good morning. It's been a year. And over the last 12 months, I'm excited to say I've become a missionary of Faith Bible Chapel. So I just want to say thank you. One, thank you, Pastor George, and thank you. I am very, very grateful to be one of your missionaries. And I'm a missionary to the churches in the city. God has given me a dream, a vision of what it would look like in a specific community for the body to be one. And I shared last year a little bit about this John 17 dream that I have. And in John 17, Jesus prays for all of us right before he's getting ready to be arrested and crucified. He prays for us, and his prayer is simply this: may they be one. May all believers be one. And he prays that because when there is oneness, when there is unity among his people, people that don't know him are drawn to him. And so I've decided to, with the blessing, the encouragement of George and a few others, I've decided to kind of set aside some other things that were in my world and to go after this dream of seeing the body of Christ, make the kingdom tangible for the people in our community. And I'm excited to say that it's happening. It is happening. And there is a movement up front that I'm excited to share with you today. About 5 years ago, as this was being birthed, I sat in a room with George and a few others, and we started to dream about what is it that we could do together that we could never do alone. And we settled on this area of service and service to those in need. And then we started to think about, well, how should we best leverage our time and our resources and our energy? What is that cause that we should really go after? Could we eradicate an issue from the face of our community for the good of our city? And as we talked about that, we realized that we had no clue about what issue that should be. And so they commissioned me to go out and to begin to have conversations with the mayor and the police chief and the city manager's office. And I want to introduce you today to someone who I've met along the way, and just let you hear her heart, because it's impacted all of us as pastors, and I think it'd be great for her just to share with you too. So would you just welcome Vicki Ryer. Vicki is the city manager in Arvada, assistant city manager. I just gave you a promotion. You're now the city manager. She's the assistant city manager in Arvada.
Give me a promotion for a job I don't want.
So 5 years ago, Vicki, I started poking around in the city offices and just asking some questions. Can you remember that?
I do remember that. Pretty well.
Why don't you share about how those conversations went?
So Dave started showing up. He affectionately refers to that as stalking,
yes.
And that's actually what was going on. So Dave would show up at a mayor's breakfast. He'd show up at city events. He'd make appointments to see me in the office. And Dave had incredible passion for making a difference in Arvada, and that was evident. And what he kept asking for, the question he would ask is, if the churches could do one thing in the city of Arvada, if they could make a huge difference, what would that be? And I would very calmly look at him and say, you remember what I said?
Yes.
I said, if you could just get people to shovel their neighbors' sidewalks, that would be huge.
And I thought that was really lame. I was like, no, give us something. Give us something like sexy, you know, give us something good, you know, give us something big.
Yeah, Dave wanted to do something like solve world hunger or build a home for every homeless person, yeah. That kind of thing.
Right.
So
and over and over again, you kept saying, could you just get your people to shovel their neighbor's driveway?
Yeah, and amazingly enough, and that sounds like such a small thing, but it's really powerful because through the course of my work, I do community relations, and you would be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't, the number of times we get phone calls in the city manager's office for exactly that thing. Somebody calls and says, gee, can you help me? I can't get to my mailbox, or I can't get out of here because it's a snowstorm. I've got a doctor's appointment. Can you help me trim the bushes that have overgrown the sidewalk and now I'm in trouble with code enforcement because I'm, you know, it's against the law to do that. And over again, we get requests from people for really simple things. But the truth of it is, I cannot use and I cannot allocate general tax dollars, monies that come to the city to provide for the safety and welfare of the community. I can't spend that money and send a parks crew or a streets crew guy out to shovel somebody's sidewalk or to trim a bush. And I keep thinking there has to be a way for that to be done more effectively and with more power. And I can also say that we really have to be cautious about thinking about things like a program. If you have a program, somebody has to organize the program. Somebody has to manage the program. And then there has to be a budget allocated to the program. And anytime you spend government dollars on anything, there's reporting and triplicate forms and a lot of red tape. And programs may sound like the answer, and they're never the answer to just personal need.
Yeah, one of the lines that that you said early on that really impacted me was, a good neighbor always trumps a good program. And that was powerful. And just understanding what your world is like and why this neighboring issue matters so much to you and to others. You know, several conversations throughout the course with meeting with city officials, it's always been, you know, this neighboring thing is a really big deal.
Neighboring is really important from the city's perspective, too, because it's actually what creates safety. Right. In community. And I think that's one of those things that we may know on some level, but we don't really concretely think about. So consider this. The reason that a neighborhood is safe when people know each other is because you know what time lights are supposed to go on in a house. You know which car is supposed to be in that driveway. You know what time the blinds go up and down. So if those things are occurring out of sync or aren't occurring, and you're paying attention to that, that actually prompts you to action. You're either gonna call that neighbor or contact the police department to find out what's going on. It really does make a difference in the context of safety. Our police chief will tell you the same thing.
Yeah. So I remember all these conversations, neighboring, and then we've got the great commandment, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just remember having this moment, a lot of us did as pastors, and just going, oh my goodness, Jesus is a stinking genius. Like he gets asked to boil it all down to one thing. And he says, love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, Jesus' master plan is that Christians all over the world would be loving those who he's placed right mm-hmm. around them. Mm-hmm. And I think for most of us, though, we don't live like that. If you're like me, I grew up in the church. And so there's just certain things that it's easy to become inoculated to. Some of the most powerful teachings of Jesus we become numb to because we've heard them so much. And so what happened in some of these conversations with Vicky and the mayor, what happened for my wife and I was that we were convicted and we realized that that when everyone's your neighbor, right? You know, when Jesus talks about the Good Samaritan parable and he just expands that definition of neighboring. And so it's easy for us to go, everyone's my neighbor and I'm just involved in this good thing and that good thing and this thing. But that still doesn't diminish the fact that the person who God has placed 20 feet from your front door is still your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And here we've got the city saying, you know what? If the Christians, if the people that sit in your churches could just kind of raise the bar on neighboring, we think it would make a really big difference. And then we look at the text and we're like, wow, it sounds like Jesus thinks the same thing. And so that's what's brought us to this point of having 43 different churches all preaching the same message, all kind of putting some really tangible steps to this this whole effort. So
I'll also say in that context of safety, if you think about emergencies, if you think about what's happened recently in Joplin, if you think about what happened in the South through Tennessee, all of the tornadoes, all of the flooding along the Mississippi, and if you even think back to what happened here in Arvada and all through Jefferson County 2 years ago in July, we had a pretty substantial hailstorm and some wind bursts that broke trees and downed power lines. You remember that? You know who the best and fastest emergency responders are? They're the people living next door to you.
That's right.
Those are the people who are going to be the first on the scene. Now, I don't mean to say that the emergency responders, police and fire and ambulance and all the city crews are on the streets in a nanosecond, but they are taking care of the really big, hairy stuff. They're clearing roadways and they're dealing with substantial injury and traffic hazards. But the people in Joplin, who were the first ones out of the rubble, where were they going? Right next door, and they're calling people's names. And that's exactly what happened in July. People came out of their doors and immediately check on their neighbors. So emergency responders, that's you, that's me. Yeah. We're the ones who make it safe to be here.
Yeah.
Let me expand on that a little bit. I think when we think of crisis, or when a crisis does happen, there is a natural response for us to be concerned about our neighborhoods. I mean, that's when people rally, when there's a crisis. But do you realize behind every door there's a story? So within those neighbors, those eight neighbors around you, there's probably some crisis going on in their life. Mm-hmm. Who are they going to turn to? That crisis could be going on, but if you're a stranger to them, if you haven't built a relationship with them, they could be holding that crisis, whatever it might be, a disease, a lost job, or a loved one, or a marriage, or something like that. But we're there strategically because there's a hope within us. And we're to be ready to give a reason of that hope that it is to anyone who might ask or inquire of that. But how are they going to ask unless you have some kind of an acquaintance or relationship? So it really gets down to every day there's a crisis, every day we could be used to respond.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about this whole, you know, initiative that's been put in front of us, it doesn't matter if you live in a very affluent neighborhood, it doesn't matter if you live in a place where maybe the brokenness is more visible. There's a story behind every door. You know, if you live over here in Westwoods, there are people next door to you and their marriage is struggling. They're dying to figure out how to parent their kid better. Maybe financial debt. You know, if you live in another neighborhood where maybe the problems are a little bit more visible, maybe it's the condition of a house. That there is literally a story behind every door. And so I think when I first started in on this, I'm like, well, how's neighboring going to help those who are struggling in our community? But it really does, and it goes way beyond that. And sometimes it's messy, right?
Yeah, I'll share with you a story, and this is the importance of what Pastor George said, too, about knowing names. So a couple of years ago, my husband is a natural neighbor. He makes friends with everybody, chats with everybody. Knowing names is not a stretch for him, and for some of us, it's a little more of a struggle. But Jerry had made sure we knew everybody. And so, like 9:30 at night on a Sunday night, and he and I are actually transitioning into jammies because we get up early in the morning and go to work on Monday. And there's a knock at the door. And it happens to be the people from the house right across the street. And it's a woman who's a widow, her adult son, and their little buddy, the adult son's son, living with them. And they have had a catastrophe occur with a pet. And they are on their way to the emergency vet clinic at 9:30 on a Sunday night. And they're standing at our door, and the dad's crying, and he says, "We have no idea how long we're going to be tied up, and we just don't think it's in anybody's best interest to take Riley with us to the vet's office. Can we leave him here with you?" Yeah. And we said, "Sure, come on in." And we kept Riley for a little over an hour that evening. And think about that. Who would you turn your five-year-old child over to? Who would you give your five-year-old to and say, "Hey, you know what? We're leaving. We don't know when we're coming back." Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And they did that because they knew our names and we knew their names. And we spoke to them and we knew about Riley. And to this very day, it pleasures us greatly whenever we see Riley. He's always like, "Hey, best friends." Yeah. It's wonderful, but it is messy. Yeah. And I would also say that not just messy like that, but it's messy because these are people who live close enough to you to know you. They know how you are with your children. They know how fast you drive through the neighborhood. They've maybe heard a little too much yelling one time or another. Maybe they know that the gardens really should be weeded better than they are. These people know you. And the risk is that you're going to be exposed to them mm-hmm. in a very human way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Let me share this.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's that famous theologian, Peanuts, in his cartoon where Lucy was accusing her little brother, Linus, of saying, not loving his fellow man. And he said, "I love mankind. It's just people I can't get along with." It can be messy.
That's right. You know, and this thing about neighboring, the other part of this that's so genius is that it confronts so many different things in our lives. What it's going to do in your neighborhoods is incredible. What it's going to do in your own life is also incredible.
That's right.
I mean, this thing, you know, it's one thing when we go overseas and I've led mission trips and they are powerful and we come back home, or we go downtown to a soup kitchen and it's powerful. If you take this on, you need to know this. Your neighbors are going to be there every single day.
That's right.
When you drive in and when you drive out. And you don't get to choose them. You know, it's one thing when I get to go and like, yeah, they're like really different than you are. But there's something that's really beautiful and really sacred when you step out and you follow Jesus and you start putting yourself in relationships with people that are different than you. It teaches us about ourselves. And in the spiritual formation that my wife and I have experienced through this over the last 2.5 years has been incredible. This neighboring thing will mess you up if you give in. If you lean into this, it will confront the way you spend your time, your money, the way you view your house and your stuff. But I think, and I know this, you know, that George and I really feel strongly, like Jesus has called us, the people in this room, to get into the mess. You know, the gospel is not, hey, find a really good house in the suburbs and make sure that the fence is like high and that it's all wood. And I have a house in the suburbs and that's what my fence looks like. The gospel is, listen, we're supposed to be rubbing shoulders with people, engaged with others, in relationships, in real relationships. Know this, real relationships. Think about your family, okay? They are messy. But they're also really powerful.
Not my family. My family's
okay. No, yeah, yours is perfect. The rest of us.
Yeah.
The rest of us.
And I would also say that whether you engage in this process formally, whether it's in you to be that neighbor that goes out and hollers and gets to know the names, or whether you just decide in your heart to do so quietly, take the challenge and realize that God intends good things for you. And I'll also encourage you to know that you may find people in your neighborhood who don't want to be neighbors. They bought the house in the suburb with the big fence, and they really don't want to be bothered by you. Don't be offended, and don't make up stories about what that means. I would really encourage you to think in your heart that there may be some brokenness there that is so grievous for them, whether it's present or past. Mm. And again, it's just an opportunity for you to be loving and kind to people who say no. because we're going to give them the opportunity to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk about some real practical things that we're doing, and several people in the city offices have given us some great advice. And so here's what we're dreaming about right now. And by the way, I just want to share some numbers with you. There's over 24,000 people that are going to hear this message, that have heard this message over the last couple weeks. So 43 churches, 11,500 households are hearing this message. So think about this. We'd have this little graph. If you have the little yellow card, take this out. And by the way, raise your hand if you can fill in one more name, one more item, one more thing about a person than you could a week ago. I just want to see, raise your hand. Right? Yes. That's amazing. Yeah, that's what this is about. You know, everyone in here. Like, the goal is that, like, each week you should be able to fill in, you know, maybe just a name. Maybe it's somebody you introduced yourself to 2 years ago but then forgot their name, and that now you're learning how to retain it. You know, these are real simple baby steps. But here's what we're dreaming about. We want to connect the body in our city. We want you to be able to partner with other people that are hearing this message in different congregations. We think there's something that's really powerful that happens when people do this together. And so one of the things that we've done is we've created a site. And 2 weeks ago, this site had 40 different households that were marked on it. And I'm going to show you a picture of, here's what the site looks like today. Okay, if you, there you go.
There it is.
Okay, if you go in, and that's just, what are we looking at? Ward to Kipling to, you know, right there. There's 2,500 households right now that are on this site. And they're just people who simply said, you know what, I'm just going to put down my first name, I'm going to put out my address, and I'm going to just say I'm part of this movement. I'm going to take some baby steps towards taking the great commandment literally. And so our dream, and if you go to this site, and I want to encourage you to do so, but if you go to this site, and I'll give you the domain here in a second, and you just take a helicopter view of your couple blocks, you can see who else is hearing this message and responding by saying, yes, I'm willing to commit to taking some baby steps towards neighboring. And so the next step then is to go over and to knock on their door and to just simply introduce yourself. Maybe God will lead you to have a block party. Maybe God will just lead you to have a friend. Maybe God will lead you to start beginning to pray for some of the needs in the neighborhood. But when you look at this, there's no denying that there is a movement that's going on.
That's
God
right.
is doing something. The pure fact that 43 churches would all be doing the same thing, you know it's a God thing, right?
that's right.
No offense. You know it's a God thing. And so this for us, and this little yellow card is your tool to be a part of this thing. So if you were not here last week, if you're still kind of wrestling with this, I would invite you to just put down your first name, your address, and your email. I know there's all kinds of fears that come up when people ask for your information. Let me alleviate some of those. We're asking for less than what's in a phone book. My 7-year-old can Google your name today and find out far more information about you than is on this card. And I will promise to give you 2 or less emails a year. So the last thing we need is like more emails, more stuff in our inbox, taking up the time that we could be out hanging out in our front yard. And if you'll just check this, yeah, I'm going to get intentional about learning people's names, or I'm feeling led to throw a block party. Did you tell this crowd last week how you got evangelized by some of your neighbors last week? Okay,
I did.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's been 3 or 4 different pastors that have come home from work and with notes on their doors that says, hey, I've never met you before. I found your house on the site. I'm excited to meet you. Like, this is actually working. The police chief, Don Wick, said, I can't believe you're actually getting people to do this. Like, I can't believe that they're doing what you're talking about. And so I'm excited about this. And so as you leave tonight, I would ask you to maybe hand this to someone as you're walking out. And you're going to receive a refrigerator magnet. If you weren't here last week, or even if you were and you want to take one of these, give them to somebody else. On the bottom is the domain. It's buildingblocks.us. And we thought long and hard about how do we make sure that this isn't some 2 or 3 week teaching series for a bunch of churches? How do we make sure that there's a chance that this might be a movement? This might be a deal where the Christians in our community start to interact in a different way with the people that live right around them. And so the place that we thought of that you would have to look at this every single day is your fridge.
Right.
And so we want to hand this to you. And it's just got spots for you to put your names of the neighbors that are around you. And if your neighbors see this on your fridge, I think it's cool just to say, yeah, I'm trying to like actually learn people's names that live around me. But there's something that's really incredible that happens when you put this on your fridge. The first is this. You put it on your fridge, and most of these squares are blank, you're going to feel really guilty and horrible about yourself, and you're going to change. It's going to like make you get desperate to go find out some of their names. And so the second thing is this, in seriousness, when you see these people's names on a daily basis, I've learned that I start to think about them a lot more often.
That's right.
I find myself praying for the people that God has placed around me. And we're really excited about this tool. And we think that if people use it, that it'll make a big difference.
Right.
So I want to say this too. You know, this is going on in Golden churches, in Lakewood churches, in Arvada churches. When you look at the map, it's Fort Lupton all the way down to Castle Rock. This is something that goes way beyond this. But I do want to say this. The people that God has put in authority in our community are incredible. And I talk about Jefferson County and I talk about the city of Arvada. Like, we are so lucky to have leaders in our community who are not just willing to partner with the faith-based community, but motivated to do so. And they serve. Like, their whole heart is to serve our community and to reach out to those in need. And so, Vicki, I want to say on behalf of us to everyone at the city, but to also you very specifically, thank you. Thank you for, you know, yeah.
All right, would you stand with me, please?
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.